Oh, maybe we've got four members in hand now. So we're called to order, and we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2822, A. Engrossed. And ask Jan to give us a brief introduction and invite Representative Smith to come forward to talk to us.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2822A comes to us from the House with a vote of 53-3 and requires that statewide math problem solving and English writing assessments be given on or after March 1st in grades 3, 5, or 8. It requires the Board of Education to establish criteria and a process for granting waivers to school districts for the testing dates, and would first apply to the 2001-2002 school year, declares an emergency, and takes effect July 1, 2001.
Representative Smith.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate you hearing this bill, and members of the committee, Senator Hartung, who we served together, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
I'm, of course, Representative Tootie Smith, House District 28 from the Molalla area, and I'm the chief sponsor of House Bill 2822. This bill would tweak benchmark testing dates to March 1st of the school year, and in doing so, I believe it would enhance the education of our students. Some may ask, why is this needed? Well, I came out of a K through 5 elementary school and saw what I considered premature testing did to our students and faculty. And don't get me wrong, I favor testing as a way to measure a student's performance and accountability. However, we need to look at how and when the test is being conducted. What I saw is benchmark tests for a given school year in grades 3 and 5 were given in the months of January and February, and that did not make sense to me because they were testing on subject matter. If you're giving a test in the 5 months of the school year, then why are we in school for 9 months? And at grade levels 3 and 5, sometimes the developmental areas of the brain is not completely formed yet to handle some of these problems that they're asked to compute and write, and at third grade level, some of the writing assessment is extremely difficult for third grade students, regardless of their intellect and ability, and giving them an extra 3 to 4 weeks makes a lot of difference when you're a third grader. I've also noticed a lot of stress on both the teacher and student during the preparation of testing time. One of the girls in my daughter's third grade class broke down in tears while trying to perform on a test. She was truly afraid she would fail. A lot of pressure had been put on her to pass the test. And in doing so, what message are we sending to our students about taking tests? Teachers were also feeling nervous about the early testing times, and that message is often transferred from them to the students without even knowing. You may hear from some folks that say this is not needed because computer testing is coming to our schools, and TESA is being launched on an experimental basis in our schools. This has nothing to do with TESA, and I favor TESA. Don't get me wrong. It will be fantastic if we could give students tests on a computer and have to not worry about paperwork and streamline the process. I'm in favor of this. This will not have anything to do with that. Testimony, did you pass out this morning? Thank you. From a school teacher, a school principal, and a curriculum director at the Molalla River School District, and they're very much in favor of this. I've had support from the OEA, COSA, OSBA, and the Department of Education, and I work closely on this to draft the -1 amendment that I feel made this bill even stronger and better because there were some things I hadn't considered. And, of course, I looked at it from a different point of view and says, well, yeah, let's try to make that work. I've been very involved with Kate Dixon on this and drafting her amendments, and she seems to think this is quite workable. It's very, very popular from a teacher's point of view, as you can imagine, what they're dealing with in these testing. Out in Molalla area at the elementary schools, when they first started testing third graders, it was at the same time where they had the initiative measure to come forth to tie teachers' accountability with their salaries, if you remember that. So teachers were quite nervous about the grades their students would be performing, because they were led to believe at that time that their jobs would be in danger. And I don't think that's the way we want to go down the education route at this, for this lower grade school level. So like I say again, it's for grades 3, 5, and 8 in the subjects of math problem solving and writing assessment. And there are some other people who want to testify on this today, but I'd be more than happy to answer questions of the committee.
Any questions? Dr. Castillo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry, maybe you already covered this, and I should just look at your written testimony here. I guess what was the magic, what is the significance of March 1?
Because tests were being given in January, February of the school year. And it makes everybody the same. It allows a little bit more time to learn the subject matter and for teachers to teach it.
Okay. Thanks for your testimony.
Well, thank you.
Good to see you.
Good to see you, Senator Castillo. Our paths don't often cross as much as I would like them to.
Any further questions? If not.
Well, I would urge the committee to pass this out today, if you would, please. And thank you very much.
Thank you. Ask Chuck Bennett and Beth Ann Darby to come forward. Jim Green.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Chuck Bennett. I represent the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. Very simply, we have provided you with some written testimony, which is a floor letter we provided in support of this legislation on the House side. I think more than anything want to compliment Representative Tootie Smith for the work she did on this. This is one of those classic examples of a bill that started off with some interesting ideas that was improved with amendment and a lot of cooperation and conversation. It went really quite well. We're very pleased with the bill that's coming to you. We believe it resolves a number of issues that were brought to the House committee by Molalla River and that we have heard from other constituents of ours. It dealt with changing testing environment, particularly with the computer testing, by confining its testing limitations to written tests. We think all in all it's a much improved bill from its original from the original bill, and are very excited to be supporting it. So thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Jim Green with the Oregon School Boards Association. I would echo what Mr. Bennett has said, Representative Cosa. The bill as it originally came forward had some issues that our associations had with it, and I know that the Department of Education has had. Representative Smith has worked with us and the department to amend away our concerns and the department's concerns with the bill. It will not hinder the TESA program. I think Representative Smith may have mentioned that, which is our computerized testing program. It will not hinder that. Those programs, those pilot programs, will continue forward. And as Mr. Bennett has said, this bill is in the best form that it can be in, and we support the bill wholeheartedly.
Members of the committee, Chair Starr, my name is Beth Ann Darby, and I'm here on behalf of Oregon Education Association. And I simply want to thank Representative Smith for offering us the opportunity to work on this bill from our perspective. This is a great bill. It allows students opportunity to learn before we take the time to test them on what we expect them to know. And we think that that's a worthy goal. We appreciate her willingness to consider some of the current concerns we had with the original bill and work through those issues. And we are very supportive of this idea. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Hearing none, thank the witnesses. Appreciate everybody lining up. We're going to close the public hearing. There's no one else signed up to testify. We'll open the work session on Senate Bill, or House Bill 2822A.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Gordley.
I move House Bill 2822A engrossed to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Gordley has moved House Bill 2822A engrossed to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Open a public hearing on, and we looking for...
I told him we'd do the building team, so maybe we...
We're going to skip the public hearing until Mr. Patrich shows up, and we will open a work session on House Bill 3395A in Gross.
Want to name a carrier to 2822, over in your body?
Carry.
Sure.
Wordley will carry 2822, and looky here.
There he is.
All right, we're going to close that work session on House Bill 3395A and open a public hearing on House Bill 3352. Representative Patrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Colleagues, I'm pleased to bring you House Bill 3352, and for the record, I'm State Representative Rob Patrich, House District 60 in Medford. House Bill 3352 is a program that I became aware of as a result of reading a state government news magazine. It's modeled after a Massachusetts model that they currently have in their state. It is called the Spread the Word program, and we've talked to Massachusetts, and it seems to be working reasonably well. The whole tenet behind the Spread the Word program is to allow children can self-identify themselves, at least in Massachusetts, on the standardized tests that they take. If they don't have reading materials, they're available at home. Many students, as you're aware of, throughout Oregon don't have reading materials that are available at home. Parents can't afford them. Maybe non-English speaking homes or whatever. They can self-identify themselves through the standardized tests is what they do in Massachusetts. That information is all held to be confidential. Schools that wish to participate, the Department of Education would coordinate book drives to collect donated books and help redistribute those to the children who need them in schools throughout the state of Oregon, looking at age appropriateness and other things. It is a voluntary program. There was some concern in the House Education Committee whether this was a mandate on local schools to do this. Portland was concerned. I testified on the record, and I think the language, if you read through it carefully, does not make it a mandate. For local school districts, it is available for them to do. There is a minor fiscal on that of approximately $15,000 for the Department of Ed to coordinate this program through Department of Ed. It is done, as you can see, by the article that I passed out to you all from Massachusetts on about $10,000. We could seek grant funding and other methods in order to do that, I believe, through Department of Ed, or I believe they can absorb it within their base budget, or I'd be happy to work in the ways and means process to ensure that that particular piece could be funded through their current budget. I also have some of the posters that these groups that they're using in Massachusetts. It is a low-cost program. It is a program that promotes, through a coordinated effort, volunteerism within the state. I've been involved in several bills regarding volunteerism. We worked through the parks budget last time, put in a full-time volunteer coordinator to coordinate civic groups, whether they be Campfire, Boy Scouts, Boys and Girls Club, to come and do repairs in parks. I think it is the amount of FTE that they generate through volunteer programs. The Parks Department is about the equivalent of 200 FTE. That includes the beach cleanup and some other programs that they coordinate. I think this would be a great program. Kids could self-identify themselves, so that information is confidential and increases reading and literacy in the state of Oregon for very little or no cost.
Questions to the witness?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Gordley.
Thank you, and good afternoon, Representative Patrich. Just doing a quick read here of the handout on the Massachusetts program, I'm intrigued at this piece of information which says that the Massachusetts program recently received a $302,000 award from the State Attorney General's office. How did they work that out?
I'm not quite sure, Senator.
We'll call and see.
Interesting.
Any further questions? We are in work session. No, we're in the public hearing mode. Anyone else care to testify on the bill? If not, we're closed public hearing, work session on House Bill 3352.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hartung.
I move House Bill 3352 to the floor with a DuPass recommendation.
Senator Hartung has moved House Bill 3352 to the floor with a DuPass recommendation. Any further discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Okay.
Thank you.
Senator Hartung will carry. Thank you, Representative Patridge.
Thank you. 58-0 looks good.
We close the work session on House Bill 3352 and open a work session on House Bill 3395 in Gross. Jan, would you bring us up to date?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee might recall that this is the bill we had up on Tuesday that dealt with various charter school provisions. There was some issue with one of the provisions about upon joint application, a charter school sponsor and a charter school could waive all the provisions in the chapter, and the OEA and the OSEA had some concerns about that. Chair directed them to work with the OSBA. They came with some amendments. Those are the Dash A3 amendments. The ACLU, working with one of our members, noticed there was a paragraph that had caused them some anxiety that was just in the existing law that had been, I don't know whether you call it overlooked or not, but when the bill was originally drafted last session. And if you look on your Dash A2 amendments, on that first page, on line 21, they've added the words race and religion among those issues that a charter school could not limit student admission based upon. Right now, it reads ethnicity, national origin, disability, gender, income level, proficiency in the English language, or athletic ability. And so the ACLU is recommending that we add race and religion to that list. And then if you find that you like both amendments, the Dash 4s combine all these ideas. The Dash 3 amendments, I believe the people who worked on the language are here. But briefly, what they do is add two unwaivables to that paragraph that goes ahead and lets them grant a waiver of the chapter provision that specifies that they can't waive licensing requirements and the requirement that the students be transported to the school. And they've also, while they were about it, they mentioned this on Tuesday that they weren't quite happy with how the wording was with the charter school being able to use ESE services. And so they've finessed that language a little bit, too.
Well, what does the finessing do?
Right now, Mr. Chair, on page 3 of the Ain Gross bill, lines 12 and 13, right now it says, a public charter school may receive services from an education service district in the same manner as a school district. You might remember they really meant that to be school, as school district. And so now the A3 amendments change that to read, a public charter school may receive services from an education service district in the same manner as a non-chartered public school in the school district in which the public charter school is located.
Very good. Well, that's in...
That is in the Dash A3s. It's also in the Dash A4s.
So if we have the A4s, we're adopting
the 2s and the 3s both.
The 2s and the 3s both. Discussion committee?
Well, Mr. Chair, I want to thank Andrea Meyer for catching the omission from the charter schools bill from last session, because I can remember that we had testimony from the Northwest Regional Educational Laboratory around not limiting student admission based on ethnicity, national origin, race, religion, disability, gender, income level, proficiency in the English language, athletic ability, et cetera. So, nice catch, Andrea. We do need to take care of that. The concern I have is with the prohibition against a person employed by a public charter school from serving on a district school board, and I understand that it's currently law that employees of school districts cannot serve on school boards. I happen to be one who believes that school district employees should be able to serve on school district boards. So, with that said, I'm going to vote for the measure, but I'm just putting that other concern on record, because I do believe that school employees bring a particular perspective and point of view that is valuable, and we need to find a way to examine current statute and fix that. I don't know that we're going to do it in this session, but I think that is something that needs to be revisited.
Thank you. Further comment? Chair would entertain a motion to...
Mr. Chair, I'd move the -4 amendments for the A-endorsed House Bill 3395.
Senator Hartung has moved the -4 amendments to the A-endorsed House Bill 3395. Any further discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, it's ordered.
I'll carry that if you want me to.
We just moved the amendment. Let's move the bill.
I move the amended House Bill 3395 with the A4 amendments to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator Hartung has moved the amended House Bill 3395 to the floor with the do-pass recommendation. Any objection?
Mr. Chair, I still have a concern because we still have the section in here, I believe, that would limit, the background financial, doing any kind of assessment about the financial viability of those who are forming a charter school. I know that was an issue in the Eugene School District. I don't know that they're on board with this amendment. Are they okay with it? I guess I'd like to ask. Oh, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Jim Green with the Oregon School Boards Association. Mr. Chairman, Senator Castillo, I believe the amendments and the bill you're talking about is 596. Not 3395. And 596, sorry. I believe, and your committee administrator can correct me if I'm wrong, came out of committee on Tuesday.
Okay.
With the amendment.
I'm getting confused.
And that was 596.
Okay.
That had that issue in it.
Thank you for the clarification. Much appreciated. Any further discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Senator Hartung will carry. We're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 595. Jan, bring us up to date with the new amendments.
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 595 was sponsored by yourself and would establish an elementary school pilot program on teaching students on how to read using explicit phonics. We had a hearing on it in April 12th, and since then, discussions with Portland Public Schools have prompted the Dash 1 amendments. The Dash 1 amendments replaced the bill, but would establish a 3-year pilot elementary school reading program with a focus on integrating explicit phonics in elementary schools that serve students from low-income families. Eligible districts are those districts with an enrollment of greater than 50,000 ABMW, and that pretty much means Portland. The school district board shall select the elementary schools and the classrooms for participation. The participating school districts shall give additional training to teachers already using phonics in the first year of the program, and then those teachers would serve as mentors for the other teachers. The reading program would be implemented in the last 2 years of the program, and at the end of the first and third years, the participating school year school districts would report to interim legislative committees on education on the progress of the program. And it appropriates an unspecified amount of general funds for the program and declares an emergency and is effective on passage. Hattel Sullivan from Portland Public Schools is here. Do you have any questions?
Please.
Good afternoon. For the record, I'm Patricia O'Sullivan, Portland Public Schools. Senator Starr and I worked out some amendments, and we're both happy with them. We like the amendments. It sets up a pilot program. I want to make a couple things clear on the record that Senator Starr and I do understand, and that is that this would not take the place of current reading programs in any school. It would be an additional piece of their reading programs. It's focusing on explicit phonics and getting teachers trained and getting mentors for teachers so that they know how to teach phonics, and then implementing the pilot program in a number of different schools. And there's two caveats to my support on this bill. One is that it doesn't take any money out of the current state school fund, that it's additional money somewhere, wherever you get it, for this grant program. And the second one, and this is for Senator Gordley, who's indicated that she would like these to go in all crisis schools, and I've agreed to that to the extent that we can, but we do have a strategic plan that talks about local school planning, and so there may be a crisis school that doesn't want it, or they may be one of the three schools that currently have it, implicit phonics. So as much as we can, we will gear it towards the crisis schools, but there are other low-income schools in Portland as well. So I just wanted to put those two caveats on the record, but we are in support of these amendments.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your fine work and effort on this. This does have a fiscal that's at least not fully known. We will be sending it to Ways and Means. And Chair would entertain a motion to adopt the Dash 1 amendments.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the Dash 1 amendments into Senate Bill 595.
Senator Perioli has moved the Dash 1 amendments in Senate Bill 595. Further discussion?
Mr. Chair, I would also like to thank Patty O'Sullivan from Portland Public Schools for her work making this happen. Thank you.
Certainly invaluable. We appreciate it. Is there any objection to that motion? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 595 as amended to Ways and Means.
Senator Gordley has moved Senate Bill 595 as amended to Ways and Means.
Might add by prior referral.
By prior referral. Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. We will now open a work session on Senate Bill 648. Jan, would you help us evolution of this a little bit, and then we'll ask Therese to come up and explain the new amendment.
Certainly. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 648 is the autism bill, and we've had this up the fourth a couple of times. There have been some amendments. The latest amendments are the -3 amendments stated today. And briefly, those -3 amendments are from Senator Starr's office, and they would set up a graduate level program at one of the higher ed university system schools and would create this training program, a graduate level training program. And it also directs mental health division to set up a voluntary registration of individuals who get this training. They would get an annual certificate. And Therese will talk about these amendments in more detail. But briefly, you also have in front of you an autism outcome study. And state teacher certification requirements for teachers working with students with autism spectrum disorder. Senator Farioli had asked the Department of Ed to come back with some more information about what other states are doing in terms of applied behavioral analysis training. And so they are here to answer any questions you might have about those two documents.
Thank you very much. Therese?
Honorable Chair and members of the committee, this bill is very simple.
We need your name for the record.
I am Therese Stewart. Anything else? That's it. We've pared the bill down to establish a graduate level program in behavior analysis, which would include practicum site, and establishes the standards by which that would be set up, and those that are established standards within the profession of applied behavior analysis. The other component of the bill is the Department of Mental Health and Developmental Disability would set up the voluntary registration system for individuals who are supervising programs in applied behavior analysis. And that's it.
Questions of the witness? Well, all of a sudden we've got a subcommittee and hearing here. I think we may want to ask you questions later, so if you'll be available.
I do have some information that Senator Farioli was interested in, so maybe when he comes back.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Are we ready to move the amendments when we get the four bodies here?
I think that we're ready to do that. I would.
Can I see if they're in the hall and come to do that?
Marilyn and Steve, would you come forward and explain the autism outcome study a little bit for us?
Oh. Indian girl.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Steve Johnson, Associate Superintendent, Office of Special Education. Marilyn Gintz will describe the information that we have provided to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in reference to the outcome study, it's a project that we've been working on through the Department of Education in cooperation with Portland State. And we have 65, I think that's the number, sometimes it changed, but we've had an incredible number of people involved in this. We started with 67, we lost two, they may have gained two, but we've maintained that since 1998. We started contacting parents, so we've kept those kids in this study. What we're doing is looking at students in Oregon, particularly young children. It's focused on children from, they started at age three, so they, or two or three, so they were in early childhood programs. Some of them now are school age, and we're tracking those students. We started out with a baseline set of data, and we've been tracking those students now with quarterly and annual assessments, and the assessments vary depending if it's quarterly or annually. And we've got some preliminary data. It's not, the study's not done. We're in the third year. In fact, many of those students, probably as we speak, are going through some of those evaluations to determine their progress. Overall, the initial data shows that the majority of the students made progress. Some students made as much progress as 16 months gain in language areas in 16 months. On average, those students gained 10 months in language in 16 months. So we're looking at those initial early skills and how they're making progress in that area, and we continue to track those.
So it's primarily language skills that you're...
We're looking at language skills, social skills, and their readiness to participate in an educational environment. So, you know, it's not quite that specific. That's fairly broad, but those are the skills we're looking at.
And it's preschool age and now moving into to school age children.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, when we started into that process, they were all preschool, but because this is the third year now, a number of them are in elementary school or kindergarten. So we've been training people and tracking, we're not just looking at the student outcome, we're also looking at what's the approach that's most effective. But we won't have some of that data until all the information is synthesized after 3 years to determine, you know, what kids make progress. Is there a subset of students with particular levels of development when they started? Do they make more progress, you know, with particular interventions or not? So we're really trying to look at many issues that are the issues in the forefront of autism and what's the most appropriate approach.
Further questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Castillo.
Do you know if any of the parents who have brought the original bill to us were aware of your study? Did they know what it was and what it was tracking? And were they involved at all?
Out of the 65 students, there are two students that are in private programs. I don't know for sure if they're in the private programs that are involved with, you know, in bringing the information on 648 forward. Each regional program and early intervention program, it was open, and so I'm not sure how they passed out the information, but they certainly would have an opportunity to know about it. I've had contact from parents, you know, that have been involved in different issues and are interested in the study. They've been following the information. Some of those folks want their, if we continue this study, and that's our hope to continue tracking kids, is that they would, they're interested in having their children participate in this.
And Mr. Chair?
Yes.
So what is the goal then? You'll do the study, and then you said you'll do the, it'll be a 3-year study, and then you'll take the information, analyze it, and then what happens with that? Is it being used to design a new program, or?
One of the, Mr. Chair, representatives, or members of the committee, one of our goals is to try to identify if there are any patterns for, you know, we've looked at these growing numbers of kids with autism spectrum disorder, and, you know, 10 years ago we looked at a lot of kids that we knew from birth they had autism, there were characteristics, there were signs, there were different things. We're looking at many other subsets of kids with autism spectrum, and so we're trying to apply some consistent information, evaluate kids, and determine are there any subsets of kids that benefit from different kinds of intervention? Does the amount of intervention make a difference for a subset of kids or all kids? what are effective teaching practices. So we would take that information. I think our number one goal would be to, there are many goals, identify student progress so that we can track student progress and identify when kids aren't making progress that we're making changes immediately so that they can make progress. That's one aspect of all of this. The second aspect is that we are hopeful through this detailed study to be able to come up with some kind of a decision-making process that says when we're looking at kids that let's say perhaps they have a language level when they're starting into a program that's below 10 months. And there are some indicators in this study that they may respond differently than kids that have a language level of 15 months. And so the interventions that we would use with kids, we're hoping that we can make some good decisions about what's the most effective intervention for those children.
Further questions? I have none, and I appreciate very much you bring us this information. You stated, I think, clearly that this is in the third year of a five-year study, so you're midpoint, essentially, of the five-year study. Right. Well, thank you very much. Chair Wood now entertain that motion, Senator Hartung.
Yes. I move the -3 amendments to Senate Bill 648.
Senator Hartung has moved the -3 amendments to Senate Bill 648. Further discussion from the committee? Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The bill does have still unknown but large financial implications, so it's the chair's desire to move this also to Ways and Means, where we have reason to believe there's considerable interest in the bill. And so I would entertain a motion to move Senate Bill 648 as amended.
Mr. Chairman, so moved.
Senator Farioli has moved Senate Bill 648 amended by the -3 amendments to the Ways and Means. Any further discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. And I thank you all for your participation and due diligence, and we will have to talk to folks in Ways and Means to see what the progress may be. With that, I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 648, and I wanted to commend to the committee and educators in the audience a new book I've found that I think is timely, written by a couple of lifelong educators in Central Oregon, called Fixing America's Broken Public Education, a provocative, audacious approach. This is by Colette and Nicholas Gilroy. With that, I'm going to adjourn the Senate Education Committee. Thank you very much.